Welcome to the Deep Dive, the shortcut to being the most informed person in the room. You know, for decades, compliance, all those beta security rules and frameworks, that was this giant headache for just the Fortune 500s.
Right, the enterprises with whole floors of lawyers.
Exactly. But that era is completely over. If you're a small or medium business today, you are now squarely in the crosshairs.
You're getting pressure from, what, three different directions?
At least. You've got your clients, your insurance carrier, and the regulators all demanding proof of robust IT controls. It's not optional anymore. It's table stakes.
So our mission for you today is a tactical one. We're going to dive into the SOC2 and IPO compliance guide for SMBs and really strip away the jargon.
We want to pull out the specific practical IT controls you actually need.
And show you how to get audit ready. The whole point is to turn what feels like a burden into a massive competitive advantage.
Okay, so let's lay the groundwork. We have to define the two big frameworks here because they drive almost everything. What are we looking at?
We're talking about SOC2 and HIPAA. SOC2, that's the Service Organization Control 2. It's an AICPA auditing standard. It's all about trust.
How you manage customer data.
Exactly. It's based on 5 criteria, but security is the one that's always mandatory. And here's the key thing for SMBs. While it's technically voluntary,
the market has made it mandatory.
That's it. You want to sell to an enterprise, you need this report. Period.
Okay, so that's the market-driven one. Then you have HIPAA, which feels a lot heavier.
Oh, it is. HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, is legally binding. It sets mandatory national standards for protecting health information, or PHI.
So if you touch that data, you're on the hook.
Correct. Whether you're a clinic or just a tech company handling data for a clinic, you have to follow the rules. There's no opting out.
So why is this hitting the SMB market so hard right now in 2026? What are the stakes?
The stakes are, they're astronomical. First, just look at client requirements. Enterprise customers now demand a SOC2 Type 2 report.
And that's the one that proves your controls have been working for a while, right?
For at least 6 months. And they want it before they'll even look at a contract. So without that report, you're not just losing the bid.
You don't even get to bid.
You're not even in the conversation.
Wow. And then there's the insurance factor. Everyone's talking about how hard it is to get cyber insurance.
It's not impossible, but the standards are brutal now. The carriers want documented proof of your controls, which, you know, look a lot like SOC2 controls.
And if you have that SOC2 report,
you might actually get a discount on your premiums. So compliance is a financial lever. It affects revenue and costs.
And on the IPAA side, the regulators are really starting to focus on the smaller players.
Absolutely. The big fines get the headlines, you know, the ones over $100 million. But the real shift is that the Office for Civil Rights is now actively investigating breaches affecting fewer than 500 people.
So they're checking under the couch cushions of small businesses.
They are. A small mistake can be an extinction-level event now.
Okay, so compliance is the new differentiator. It builds trust. Let's get practical. Let's dig into the core of SOC2, that mandatory security criteria, and the 5 key controls.
Right. Let's start with control 1, access control systems. The principle is simple. Who gets in and what can they see?
So I'm an SMB owner, and I'm thinking, I got MFA on my email. Isn't that enough?
Ow.
What's the biggest gap you see here?
That is the classic gap. You need multi-factor authentication on all systems with customer data, not just email.
Like what?
Your cloud apps, your development environments, your internal ticketing systems. If any of those are just protected by a simple password, that's an automatic fail.
And it's not just MFA.
No. You also need role-based access control, or RBAC, making sure a sales rep can't access, say, developer keys. And then there's the tedious part.
Which is?
The quarterly access reviews. It sounds bureaucratic, I know, but auditors demand documented proof, like a spreadsheet with signatures, that you've manually reviewed everyone's access every 3 months.
If you skip that, you fail the control.
You fail the control.
Okay, that right there shows the level of commitment we're talking about. Let's move to control 2, change management procedures.
Right. This is all about not breaking things when you update production systems. You need a formal change request, an approval workflow, separate testing environments.
And a rollback plan in case it all goes wrong.
Exactly.
But what if I'm an SMB? Speed matters. Can't I just push an emergency fix and then, you know, document it later?
You can, but you're risking what's called a qualified audit opinion. The auditor doesn't just care if the fix worked. They care if the process was followed.
So they'll sample changes.
They'll sample random changes. And if they find even one undocumented emergency change, it suggests your controls are weak. The documentation has to be part of the workflow, not an afterthought.
Okay, so process is king. Let's talk about the data itself. Control 3. Data encryption standards.
Yeah, this is non-negotiable. Basically, your data has to be protected everywhere. We're talking TLS 1.2 or higher for data in transit, so secure websites, APIs.
And for data just sitting there.
AES 256 for data at rest. That means your databases, your backups, and yes, every single employee laptop needs to have full disk encryption.
But the source material really highlights something interesting here. It's not the encryption that's the bottleneck. It's managing the keys. Why is that such a headache?
It's because of the principle of separation. If your key is stored right next to the data it unlocks, you've defeated the purpose.
Ah, so an attacker gets one, they get both.
Exactly. Auditors require that keys are stored separately, protected in their own system, and rotated regularly. And that adds a layer of complexity most small teams just don't plan for.
Okay, control 4, monitoring and incident response. This is moving from prevention to detection.
Right. You need a SIEM system to collect logs and send alerts. But honestly, the paperwork is the killer here. You need a documented incident response plan.
And you have to test it.
Annually. You have to run a drill and prove you tested it.
So when an auditor looks at that, what's the most common failure point? Is it not logging enough?
It's not logging the follow-through. They want to see documented investigation, resolution, and lessons learned for every single security alert.
Even the false positive.
It's even the false positives. If an alert goes off and your team just turns it off without documenting why, it looks like you're ignoring threats. It's a systemic failure to respond.
That's intense. Okay, finally, control 5, the one that extends your liability. Vendor management.
You are only as secure as your weakest link, and that link is often a third party.
Your payment processor, your cloud host.
Anyone you share customer data with, you have to assess their security before you sign with them, and you need to collect their SOC2 reports every year.
So the harsh reality is, if my cloud provider gets breached, I'm still the one on the hook with my customers.
That's precisely correct. You can't outsource responsibility, and that's a good pivot. Let's move from SOC2's market pressure to IPIA, which is a legal mandate if you're touching health data. It breaks down into 3 core safeguards.
And you can feel the difference in legal weight here. What are the 3?
First, you have the administrative safeguards. This is all about policies and people. It requires a regular risk assessment. What are our risks? How do we fix them?
And contingency planning.
Crucially, documented, tested data backup plans, disaster recovery plans. If you haven't actually tried to restore your data from a backup and proven it works, you're not compliant.
Then there are the technical safeguards, the tech side of things.
Correct. Beyond the obvious things like encryption, there are 2 required implementations that trip people up. One is unique user IDs. The other is mandatory audit controls.
So that's not just optional logging.
No, it's a required mechanism for recording and examining activity in any system with health information. It ties right back to that monitoring control we talked about for SOC2.
And finally, physical safeguards. The actual building.
Often overlooked, it covers everything from who can get into the server room to workstation security. Things like mandatory privacy screens if you're displaying patient data in a public-facing area. And importantly, rules for how you dispose of old hard drives.
This brings us to a huge issue I saw in the source material, the business associate problem. Who exactly is a business associate?
The definition is incredibly broad. It's any entity that handles PHI on behalf of a covered entity. So that's your IT support, your cloud provider, even the company that shreds your documents.
And what's the key legal requirement there?
You must have a signed business associate agreement, or BAA, in place before a single piece of PHI is exposed to them. Missing a BAA is one of the fastest ways to get a massive HIPAA fine.
Okay, so if you're an SMB in healthcare, you're running 2 races at once. Where do these frameworks overlap? Where can you find some efficiency?
They overlap beautifully, actually, if you plan for it. The idea is to create a unified control framework.
So one control can satisfy both.
Exactly. Things like multi-factor authentication, role-based access control, encryption standards, audit logging, annual risk assessments, they all count for both. If you design your control to meet the stricter HIPAA standard, it will almost always satisfy SOC2.
But what are the critical differences you have to keep in mind?
It really comes down to scope and consequence. The consequence for HIPAA is federal penalties, up to almost $2 million per violation per year.
A business killer.
Truly. SOC2 failure is bad. You lose contracts, but it's not a federal penalty. And then there's scope. HiPRI applies to all systems in the company that touch PHI.
Whereas SOC2 can be more targeted.
Right, you can often limit the scope of a SOC2 audit to just the specific service you're selling.
And the audits themselves are different.
Very. HiPRI requires continuous compliance, but there's no mandatory external audit. SOC2 requires that annual third-party attestation from a CPA firm. You have to prove it to the world.
Which brings us to the road to audit readiness. And this is not a sprint, is it?
It is a marathon, a long one. If you're starting from zero and you want that SOC2 Type 2 report that enterprises want, you should budget a minimum of 18 months.
18 months. Walk us through that. Why so long?
Well, you have about 6 to 12 months for the first two phases. Scoping, writing policies, implementing all the controls, that's the heavy lift. But then comes the mandatory part for a Type 2, a 6 to 12 month operating period. You literally cannot have the audit until you can prove your controls have been running effectively for that entire time.
So you have to let it run for half a year to a full year before the auditors even show up.
Exactly. That observation period is the biggest shock for most SMBs.
And the guiding principle for that whole 18 months is that brutal phrase, documentation is paramount.
It is. The auditor's mantra is, if it isn't documented, it didn't happen. Your security could be amazing, but without the evidence trail, the logs, the training records, those access review spreadsheets with sign-offs, it means nothing.
Good security with bad paperwork fails the audit.
Every single time.
Okay, let's wrap with the top four pitfalls, the things that derail companies. Number one. Treating compliance as an IT-only initiative.
This is a classic failure. Compliance needs executive sponsorship. It needs HR for onboarding and offboarding. It needs legal. If IT is out there on an island trying to enforce rules, they will fail.
Pitfall two, the policy practice disconnect.
This is where you write a beautiful policy that says everyone uses a 15-character password. But in reality, your team is using password 123.
The policy becomes a liability.
It does. Auditors test what you do against what you say you do. Your policy has to reflect reality.
Pitfall three, documentation neglect. We keep hitting this, but it's that important.
You have to build it into your workflows. Use ticketing systems for every change, for every incident. That ticket becomes your documentation. If you try to go back and create it all after the fact, it's an impossible task.
And finally, pitfall four, which I think is the most interesting, compliance theater.
This is just ticking the boxes to pass the audit, but not actually improving your security. You're not addressing the real risks you found in your risk assessment. You're just putting on a show for the auditor.
The goal is risk reduction, not just checking a box.
Exactly. Focus on the outcome. Are we actually safer?
So, to summarize our deep dive, compliance is no longer a choice for SMBs. It is table stakes if you want to land enterprise clients or just reduce your risk. A structured approach, focusing on these controls and avoiding those pitfalls, is your shortcut to being audit ready.
And just remember the ROI here. The cost of getting compliant, maybe $20,000 to $100,000 that first year, it seems like a lot. But it's nothing compared to the average cost of a breach, which is now over $4 million.
Not to mention the contracts you can't even bid on.
Right. It starts as a cost center, but it quickly becomes your most valuable business enabler.
Okay, here's our final provocative thought for you to think about. For all of you moving to the cloud, especially with healthcare data, when a cloud provider tells you they are HiPAA compliant, does that mean you are automatically compliant just by using their service?
No, absolutely not. Choosing a vendor that will sign a BAA is a critical first step, but the burden of compliance does not end where the cloud begins. You, the SMB, are still responsible for securely configuring that service, for managing access, for encrypting your data, and for maintaining your own audit logs. The responsibility for securing your data is always, always yours.